by changing your money, you completely separate yourself from the government.
Roman calendar is the new fiat, okay, guys?
I think that this is a really strong way to onboard people.
I'll be the judge of that.
The Bitcoin blockchain seems to be a pseudo-programmatic lunar calendar.
One of my aunts said, I don't need a presentation. I'm ready to buy it.
Why is it 26? Why is it 26? Why is it 26?
Keep your time in the Roman calendar because we got a new and improved calendar coming your way.
We're calling it the Next Block Observatory.
You're listening to Flirting with Bitcoin, a weekly chat with my very interesting husband about Bitcoin and how the world and our family's life is better because of it.
It's season 4 and we've moved to Noster City.
So my Bitcoin lessons are done?
Your Bitcoin lessons are never done.
So what does new social media have to do with it?
Babe, Noster is more than social media. If Bitcoin is the new money, Noster is the new internet.
You really think so?
I do. I believe Noster will drive the next wave of Bitcoin adoption. So Noster City is where we need to be.
We?
Yeah, of course we're bringing Keon. You got your bags packed, buddy?
Yes.
Good job. Don't forget to pack your NPub.
Let's go. Hey, babe.
Hey, Mandana.
So it is the last episode of season 4 of the Flirting with Bitcoin podcast.
It is.
And we pivoted a little this season. We became Flirting with Bitcoin on Noster.
The pivot was, just in line with all the things that we are learning and trying to make use of as we change our lives out of this fiat slavery debt trap that we live in. And ironically, Noster is part of that.
Yeah, I think Noster becomes the inevitable part of that journey. Once you've gotten into Bitcoin, it can be the other way around, of course. But for us, did I get into Bitcoin before Noster existed? I think so.
I mean, that'll be up for scholars to determine.
Scholars maintain.
Yeah, they'll check your Noster account and they'll check the podcast and they'll figure it out.
They'll say, oh, she was orange pilled first, then purple pilled.
Yeah, I don't know. But what I will say is that, without Noster, we know that a lot of the information that might help you make different decisions in your life is being censored and suppressed on other platforms. So while there may not be a lot of people on Noster and there's talk of Noster dying, the people that are there, I think, are pretty strong signal people and they've left those other places. For example, Gigi is not on Twitter,
mm-hmm.
right? So like that's someone that we met in Madeira for Sovereign Engineering, but like, if we weren't on Noster, we wouldn't hear anything from Gigi.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And he's great. You should follow him if you're on Noster and you're not, but I'm pretty sure you are.
So he established a pretty solid following on Twitter. And he has since deleted his Twitter account and mm-hmm. is solely Noster. And so that's just one example of, I think, a growing number of people that as they figure out and internalize and process what's going on and try to understand how do I react to this new reality, Noster is inevitability, just like Bitcoin is inevitability. So that's why I think Noster is on brand for the podcast, and it wasn't really a pivot. Bitcoin is the currency of Noster. You zap people with Bitcoin. You don't zap them with Ethereum or XRP or whatever the latest.
I know, that's right.
Whatever the latest coin is of the day, week, month. And you definitely don't zap them with like shares of MicroStrategy or whatever latest financial product that Michael mm-hmm. Saylor is like cooking up. So like Noster is the internet for Bitcoin. And there's a lot of applications that are being built there. And we just happen to decide to build one ourselves.
Yeah. And this brings me to what I would like Ian to talk about today. As we go into this new Bitcoin version of the internet, we need a timekeeper.
I mean, that's a pretty exaggerated way of opening it. But for what we're doing at Next Block, we need a timekeeper. One of the big things about our platform is that we don't control when you see ads. That's up to the Bitcoin blockchain. And to a Bitcoiner, that's like a, ooh, that's kind of cool kind of thing, right? But to a regular person, that's still like, well, I don't know what a block is. I don't know what that means. Like, does that mean I see more or less ads than I currently do? Would be a very valid question, right? And on top of that, like, if you're not in control of it, like, who is and why? And so as I've been working on the infrastructure and technology side of what this thing called NextBlock is going to be, there's always been this piece of code that's like, is there a new block? If there is, do a thing, right? Like that's been there since day one, since we first had this idea. Like that was like the first thing that I wrote. And it's not complicated, right? I'm not even doing it with like my own personal full node. I'm just doing it by pinging Blockstream, big player in the Bitcoin mining space. So like their API is pretty much reliable for, is there a new block? But these blocks mean nothing to people, right? Like they don't really mean anything to anyone, including at the end of the day, I feel like Bitcoiners, right? It's just the next block, right? Mm-hmm. It's just one block after another. And so over the past year and a half now, as that code just sat there, it's still like, how are we really going to explain this to people without having to use the terms Bitcoin, right? Like, how do we explain this concept without Bitcoin? And I think I've come up with something really interesting. We're calling it the NextBlock Observatory. We'll get into that later on in the episode. But it really makes use of the Bitcoin blockchain as a timekeeping mechanism that I believe, quote unquote, normies will be able to understand and follow. And slowly, just like Nostr will slowly bring you over to Bitcoin, this timekeeping system will slowly bring you over to Bitcoin.
I'll be the judge of that. Before we get into it, babe, what time is it?
The current time is 901-651, and we're approximately 2,140 blocks since our last recording.
And if I gave you one US dollar, how many acres could I get on sunny Bitcoin Island?
I did not do the math for that, but it's looking like 930 acres, aka Satoshis, on sunny Bitcoin Island. It's definitely less than 1,000. I know that much.
You know, interestingly enough, the price hasn't really changed much despite like war erupting this past week. Have there been discussions about that, about how stable Bitcoin has been?
I mean, you're on Nostr more than I am. You tell me.
I actually don't see it. I might have seen someone say like, whoa, it's really interesting that this isn't shifting. But, you know, the stability of Bitcoin right now is really fascinating. I will say, as hopefully the listeners know, I am Iranian. And so my family right now in America was just, you know, in our family chat talking about what's going on. We're obviously very upset. We have family in Iran who are in danger right now. And my cousin that is orange-pilled, shout out to Cheyenne, just goes ham on Bitcoin in this group chat and is like, you know, doesn't say it, but like endless money, endless wars, like here's this, here's that, here's a clipping from a newspaper that was printed like 100 years ago. And I, literally at one point I like in a separate chat, I was like, Cheyenne, gotta let them come to you. This is a lot. Some of my relatives were like, you know, we would love a presentation on this. And so he is, I think, in a week or so, going to give a full-on presentation about this side of Bitcoin. I really hope they pay attention. One of my aunts said, I don't need a presentation. I'm ready to buy it. And I sent her my Strike referral link, and then Cheyenne sent a River one. So it was like, you know, a glimmer of hope to have during like truly such a horrific time. That's honestly, without Bitcoin, I'm sure lots of people are losing their minds. You know, the crisis du jour will make you lose your mind if you don't think that there's an alternative out of this.
Yeah, I mean, the Israeli attack on Iran is just a microcosm of how the world has been working since World War II. And we haven't had any tools at our disposal to really say like we, like our voice matters in how we think things should go. And so with Bitcoin, you can basically say like, I can't stop you from printing the money that you're going to use to fund this war. Like I can't do that, but I can protect myself from the effects of you printing that money. And so on a long enough timeline, you know, hypothetically, right? If they push Bitcoin to like $10 million, there's a lot of people that don't want war that have multiples of tens of millions of dollars that would have never had them before had you not printed said money.
I also think the lie of democracy continues to be shattered because it is not the will of the people in any of these countries. or America, for there to be a war between Israel and Iran. You know, nobody benefits from it but the world leaders and probably private corporations and things like that. And so I think it's just being shoved down everyone's face globally, how much it does not matter what the people want, that I think it's strengthening the argument that you shouldn't find money that a government can't control. Or, like, you're using the money of a government, so you're kind of supporting it. Do you support that government?
I mean, yeah, that's one way to look at it. And maybe this episode is an Iran-Israel episode, or maybe this episode is Bitcoin time. I don't know. But I don't necessarily think that it's the change your money and you're no longer supporting that government. Really where I am in a lot of my thinking right now is that by changing your money, you completely separate yourself from the government. For example, you know, there's people we buy stuff on Noster from, right? And I pay them in Bitcoin, and whatever system they have set up, that's on them. But fundamentally, like, I put the money in their hand, and there's nobody that could create any system that can stop that now, right? Like, you know, there was, you know, for example, you can't buy certain products on Amazon, not because Amazon doesn't want to sell them, but because there's a control over the money that says what you're allowed to spend your money on. And so Amazon adheres to those rules, right? So, like, I tried to buy a BB gun. We have these squirrels, right? We have these squirrels, and I wanted to buy a BB gun.
Hates them so much.
I wanted to buy a BB gun. I didn't, not because I couldn't, I can't, but I didn't because I was like, well, that's a little just like aggressive, right? But I went to try to buy a BB gun, and I cannot get a BB gun shipped to me inside of the District of Columbia. I can't. I could get it shipped to my friend who lives in Virginia right across the river, and he can bring it to me, but Amazon will not ship me a BB gun. So because someone controls the money, they control what you can buy. It all kind of extends from there. So when you have Bitcoin and you're holding it in certain ways, obviously not custodial at a place like Coinbase or whatever, if you're in Bitcoin long enough, you really start to internalize how detached you are from that other system. And for example, having all of your money, right? Like, having all of your money in Bitcoin means that I just have an address at a location now, right? I have a place where I can receive packages. I have a place where I can receive mail, and, you know, people can find me at that location. But my economic welfare is not tied to this geographic location
or
anymore.
My commerce activity.
Or my, like, commercial activity. Things, yeah. And so the beautiful thing about Bitcoin, and why I'm saying that, like, it's not just about changing your money and changing something, is that it kind of just opens your eyes to how things actually work. And once you see that you can operate just a little bit differently than you were kind of boxed into before, you just start, I mean, if you're a real thinking person, you just start trying to solve all other kinds of problems that you kind of know you always had, but didn't bother to try to solve them because it just seemed too complicated. And so now everyone has the same solution. First, you switch to Bitcoin, and then you do the things you want to do. That works for the individual all the way up to a country. And for what's going on right now, specifically talking about in the Middle East, like, when they invaded Iraq, amongst all the other things they did, they stole a bunch of gold. Like, that's well documented. There's pictures of American Rangers sitting on tops of piles of gold. Why were they stealing gold from Iraq? I don't have the official answer for that, but I do know that it was done. And what we do know is that Iran has more gold than Iraq had. So at the end of the day, whatever the issue is that they claim to have, I personally believe this is still about they want to get their hands on a physical thing, and they need to use bombs and planes to get it. If you have your money in Bitcoin, the bombs and planes are worthless. What do you blow up? What do you invade? What do you sit on top of if the money's like Bukele in a Bitcoin key and the nine people that have the keys are, like, not in the same spot? Like, it's just a completely different game that somebody's going to play it first. I don't know who, but if you're sitting on a pile of gold, you are a target for the system that currently exists. That is for sure.
Well, we've gotten way off topic, but I'm glad we had this conversation, because it's all connected. And we always learn that Bitcoin is bigger than we think that it is. It touches more things than we realize, and it hopefully fixes a lot more problems than we've even thought of.
Get the power back, get the freedom back, get an M-pub, and just start with that.
So a problem that possibly Bitcoin has just solved for you is the time counting or the time keeping in code. Is that right? Am I saying that right?
You're kind of saying it right. I wouldn't say that Bitcoin solved the problem for me. I would say that I figured out how to use Bitcoin to solve my problem.
Nice. So as the wife of Ian Reese, I will tell you, there have been so many times where Ian and his like old career and his job working for other people, something would break and he would take so long trying to fix it. And it would always come down to the date, right?
I mean, dates are like one of the three hardest things in computer science.
Yeah. So and like, so yeah. Then whenever Ian had a huge glitch, I'd be like, well, what's going on? And Ian's obviously looking at me like, there's no point in me explaining this to you. I would just say, could it be the date? And once in a while, I was right. That's how like pervasive this problem is in coding. Fair enough.
Yeah, I forget the catchphrase, but it's like dates are hard. I forget, but there's like a common trope in programming, and dates are one of them. And I've always known that like trope, but I didn't experience it until my last job. Like my last job,
yeah.
My last job really exposed me to that particular problem. And ironically, the system that I've built for NextBlock is the system that I built for my last job at the end of the day. It's the same system. The only difference is that all of the like what are called edge cases, all of the like conditional statements that you have to write to account for in what I've now been calling the Roman calendar, right? Like, and Roman calendar meaning like there are weekends.
Roman calendar is the new fiat, okay, guys?
Yes.
Like, if you heard it here first, don't embarrass yourself. And keep your time in the Roman calendar because we got a new and improved calendar coming your way.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the way I want to describe it, but sure. The point is that the Roman calendar basically has weekends, it has holidays, right? It has bank holidays. Not every month has the same number of days, yada, 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 yada.
Right, so in those conditional statements, it makes it difficult, right? Because it's not the same number every month. Like at any point of time, you have different numbers flying around. Is that like a very high level way to describe the general problem of dates with the Roman calendar?
The general problem is that just because it's January 1st or February 1st or March 1st does not mean that they are the same. It is not the first of anything. It is a number in a series of numbers between 365. But you have all these other business rules around the idea of like Monday through Friday.
Every two weeks,
right?
Like
every 2 weeks in a month, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's all these
and some months have 5 weeks, right?
And so that is the fundamental problem of the Roman calendar and why it's so tricky in computer programming. Another thing that a lot of people don't know about calendaring is that most software doesn't start counting time, or time starts counting at some point in the 70s. Right. So we've been like when I get a timestamp of something today in code, if I say, give me the current timestamp, it's giving me the number of seconds or milliseconds since like January 1st, 1970 or something like that. Right. They just picked a random date and said, we're going to count forward from this. And anything before that, we count backwards. Right. But because it's that random date and most people don't know that, you know, it's hard to explain all the problems that we have in programming. When it comes to dates, because the calendar was made for human eyes and brains to interpret, not computer programs to interpret. But now we have Bitcoin. And so as we all know, Bitcoin has block zero, right? We have the Genesis block, and we've been counting up from that point. And we know that Bitcoin basically was not running, like the network did not exist until that first block was created, and Satoshi and Hal Finney did their first like Bitcoin transaction or whatever. But before that point, there was nothing, right? So it's a really solid, like not randomly picked point in time. It is a specific point in time. And I think And as I was doing this, like somewhere in my Googling, I got like the actual timestamp, right? So that's like the exact moment of time from the Roman calendar, mm-hmm. from the programming system that we've developed on top of the Roman calendar. I have exact like timestamp of when block zero existed. But as I said in the first block, giving someone a block number just doesn't mean anything. We've been saying on this show, like, what time is it? And I give you like six numbers in a row and you're just like, okay, I guess that's the time. And it keeps counting up, right? And so as I've been working on next block, I've been just staring at this problem. Like, I want to create something that we can bring quote unquote normies into. We don't have to say the word Bitcoin. We don't have to say the word Noster, hopefully. But we're going to have this thing in there, which is like next block. And we're going to have to say what block number it is. And we're going to have that number somewhere, right? Like, just kind of by definition of the system. But as I've been exploring Bitcoin and I've been exploring like what system could I create, I made a realization. If someone's heard this before or someone's like talked about this, by all means, link it up. Tell me I'm not thinking of anything new here. It's probably true. But what I realized is that I wanted to create a time system that did not make any arbitrary decisions, right? So I wanted it to be completely based on the Bitcoin protocol. And so if you know anything about Bitcoin, there's only two numbers that are really programmed into Bitcoin. There's the difficulty adjustment, which is every 2016 blocks. And then there's the halving, which is every 210,000 blocks.
So the difficulty adjustment happens around every two weeks, and the halving is every 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, it works out that way. But because it's Bitcoin, not every block comes in exactly 10 minutes.
Right.
So the network itself is designed to adjust up or down the difficulty of mining blocks so that we kind of average 10-minute blocks. But even as I've been writing this code, like, you know, we get blocks like in 3 minutes sometimes.
Right.
These two numbers, 2016 and 210,000, are like my fundamental numbers. And they're the only numbers that I can derive other things from. Like, I can't come up with my own grouping. So I can't say, like, you know, which ironically is why we have the bits versus sats argument to begin with. We just arbitrarily grouped 100 million Bitcoin mm-hmm. together. That's not in the code, right? And because we arbitrarily grouped them and then created a cultural consensus, not a code consensus, we end up today where like Jack Dorsey can get on TV and say, well, they should be called bits. And it's like, well, you're not wrong, right? It's not like, it's not an objective statement. It's a subjective statement. So I wanted to avoid that, right? I was like, I want to avoid making subjective choices. So my only two numbers are 2016 and 210,000. And so I'm like investigating just like different systems and stuff like that. And I was going down a couple different angles. But there's two things. I have to take a tangent for a second to really explain how I landed here. If you've listened to this podcast, you might've heard me talk about how I've been recently over the past year, like researching my mom's family. And I kind of discovered that I haven't figured out exactly which tribe or the whole story yet, but it is highly probable that my mom's family is American Indian, New England based American Indian, probably some subset of the Algonquin tribe confederation that was there when the Europeans came over. And so my YouTube gets interspersed with a lot of that information as well, right? So I'll be watching Bitcoin stuff. Next video up is like something about American Indians. And I recently watched a video that I think was my breakthrough as I was looking at these two numbers in Bitcoin. So we all look at the number 2016 and, you know, I've taken it for granted also and just say, oh, that's Satoshi Nakamoto. Like,
what's 2016?
2016 blocks is the number of blocks in a difficulty adjustment. And so if you were a computer scientist and you were picking a number in the 2000 range that meant something, you normally would have picked 2048. Because 2048 is a computer programming number, right? Like a gigabyte of data is not 1,000 megabytes, it's 1,024. 2 gigabytes is 2048 megabytes, mm-hmm. right? So there's this like little extra number there that we don't really talk about once you get into the gigabytes. We just say 2,000 megabytes. So a computer programmer would look at this number 2016 and say, there's a purpose for that. Like, you specifically didn't pick 2048. So what's the purpose? And I think a lot of people looked at it and just decided, oh, it's executive order 6102 backwards, right? Which like confiscated all the gold. And maybe that is why they picked it. I don't know. But what I also realized is that if you had picked 2048, you would not have had exactly 26 difficulty adjustments every year. Some years you would have had 25, right? Because 2048, just you have a little bit extra every difficulty adjustment. And so, excuse me. If Satoshi had picked 2048, we would not have always had 26 difficulty adjustments in a year. We would have had some years where we had 25. And so by coming down to 2016, it almost ensures there might be some left over, but it ensures that there's always 26 in a year. And so my brain goes, okay, there's 26 in a year. Well, there's 12 months in a year, so there should be 24, right? So every 2 weeks is 24, but I have 26. Why is it 26? Why is it 26? Why is it 26? Why does this number, 26 divided by 2 is 13. Like, why is this number, like, why is this number like meaning something to me right now? And I realized it's because in that American Indian video that I watched, they were talking about how the American Indians operated on a lunar timekeeping system. And they had 13 moons in a year. And that was their timekeeping system. And the guy's whole video, which I'm paraphrasing some of it and I'm adding my own understanding to it as well, but the moon is humanity's like oldest timekeeping mechanism. We didn't have the ability to monitor the sun. The sun requires you to stay sedentary for, you know, multiple years in a row and monitor the movement of the sun from a specific position. Whereas the moon, you just look up in the sky at the middle of, you know, in the night and you go, okay, it's half moon, full moon, quarter moon, whatever. And you can just count how many moons you've seen without any special equipment. And it doesn't matter where you are. You don't have to stay sedentary. So my brain is like, okay, Bitcoin has 26 difficulty adjustments. I haven't changed the number 2016. If I group two of those together, I get roughly what we would call a month, a Bitcoin month. I still haven't created my own number. It's still 2016 times two. And then because of that, I end up with 13 months in a year or 13 moons in a year. That's a pretty cool idea, right? And so right when I had that realization, I like went to our calendar in the kitchen and I just started writing on the calendar like, well, when would the next one be? Right. And it just so happened, which it doesn't always happen, mm-hmm. but it just so happened that the next one coming up, the full moon and the thing that I had just like kind of come up with were going to line up on the exact same day. It was going to be May 25th, basically. And I just was like, well, that's too convenient. Right. Like, that's just like, mm-hmm. okay. If I had come up with this idea a month before, they would not have been on the same day. And I have come up with this idea right now, the next one coming are not going to be on the same day. And then I kind of like I back tested it and yeah, the Bitcoin blockchain seems to be a pseudo programmatic lunar calendar. And I think that's really fascinating.
Yeah. It's really fascinating because there's like, it could all be by chance, but even this, like every 10 minutes block, this idea of separating life out in that way, I tried to do some research around it when you were getting this idea. To see, like, is there something about us kind of resetting every 10 minutes or grouping up our time in 10 minutes? And now, like, grouping your time every 2 weeks kind of makes more sense than, I don't know, maybe a week. And then, like, the cycle of the moon, as a woman, I'm very aligned with, right? So that makes complete sense to me. All of those things, yeah, it's the 10-minute mark, though, is really interesting when I think about NextBlock specifically, because we've always kind of said it's also an ode to old school television where like every 10 minutes you'd see an ad. And so I dug into the research of that cadence and it was just luck that that's the cadence that they had like every 10 minutes when they started inserting ads in television. But it's still kind of the standard for like what's best to interrupt humans. Like every 10 minutes is kind of like mentally an appropriate way to be like, all right, I need a break. Okay, I'll keep watching.
Yeah, and I think the best television example of this I could give is Adult Swim. So Adult Swim, I think, encapsulated this, whether they did it on purpose or not, I don't know. But Adult Swim, like, created the 15-minute show. Like, I don't think anybody was doing that before Adult Swim. But Adult Swim was like, how do we get more shows between 8 and 10 p.m.? And they started this, like, 15-minute show. And basically, what it boiled down to is a 10-minute show with some ad blocks before and after it. And so some of the more popular shows that I kind of enjoyed were those types of shows. The biggest one that I think most people listening will have heard of is Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Never heard of it.
Well, yeah, but, you know.
I really haven't.
Aqua Teen Hunger Force is, like, in my opinion, like, when I'm thinking about what I'm saying, like, that's the show. There were other ones like Metalocalypse and Robot Chicken and some other ones, right? But they made a movie out of Aqua Teen, I think. So, like, it became, like, a cultural phenomenon. You didn't catch it, but
I'll catch the next wave.
There's millions of people who watched it. But the idea of, like, television and inserting ads and all of this, like, timing around this 10-minute mark, the entertainment industry, whether specifically knowing it or just happening to it and it just kind of worked, they've been doing this for a while. And that is why we kind of, like, we're like, okay, 10 minutes is, like, around the time that you would see an ad in television. So that's,
yeah, we liked it. We liked the cadence. It felt right to us. And I think, yeah, like, again, it could have just been by chance. But it would be really interesting if with what, you still haven't even, like, really explained what it is yet. I keep setting us on tangents. If for a couple of years, there's enough of us that live on that time keeping instead. And if that is a more relaxed way possibly to be, keeping track of things, 'cause maybe right now having, I don't even know, is life group by half an hour or an hour? I'm not sure, but there are consequences to all of these default decisions that have been made for us. So it is fascinating to have a different option. But with that, we'll get right back and Ian will actually explain what this idea is.
Get the power back. Get the freedom back. Get an M-Pub. And just start with that.
Okay, babe. So, the observatory. What is it?
Right. So, as I said a second ago or in the last block, I kind of made this discovery, at least I feel it's a discovery or at least an observation, that the Bitcoin blockchain is a lunar calendar. It tracks the moon. And I'm not just making that up. I have an open source library I'm going to link to in this episode. You can look at the math and you can look at the actual lunar schedule and what Bitcoin is doing. They are very close, like off by like a day max. And most times they're off by a day max. Most times it's within 12 hours.
That's amazing.
And part of that is because the difficulty adjustment brings it back, right? So it ensures that it's every 2 weeks, which ensures that Bitcoin stays closer to the 29 and a half day lunar cycle, right? While accepting that, well, sometimes they come in faster. And so I'm going to have to adjust this down, right? So I thought that was really cool. And so, you know, when I was building Nextblock, I had all these other ideas for, like, oh, this system that I'm building is going to be like the Big Ben of Nextblock City, or like the, you know, like the big clock in some center of town of Nextblock City. But then I had this, like, you know, celestial metaphor, which is that Bitcoin blockchain is tracing the lunar cycle. And so I was like, okay, that's pretty cool.
What if we don't have a clock and instead we have a
observatory? But what if, like, what about this other number, right? This other number in here is 2010 blocks or 210,000 blocks. Like, is that number also tracing something too that I'm just unaware of? You know, like, I've already kind of made this realization. It does not, right? Like, the 2010 is more of an, in my opinion, an arbitrary decision just to get you closer to a 4-year window. It doesn't trace like a lunar schedule or any planet that I've observed. But it is in Bitcoiners term, like we talk about cycles, we talk about winter's coming, mm-hmm. right? And so that number 2010 is directly tied to winter is coming, right? Like those two things are connected. And so I turned that number into the sun of this observatory. So right now this observatory has a moon and a sun. The lunar observations are tracking the difficulty adjustment. The solar observations are tracking the Bitcoin halving, right? And so with the solar observations, we get four quarters. We get summer, winter, spring, and fall.
How perfect is that?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You can divide any number by four, hopefully, any round number by four and get that type of system. But within each one of those quarters, we end up with exactly 13 moons again. So each one of those quarters, you get a full lunar cycle.
And does it line up where like it starts with spring, summer, fall, and winter? And so does it line up with like spring and summer when the price is generally high and then fall and winter is when it goes and dips? Is that right? Does it work out that way?
Again, I didn't come up with the phrase winter is coming. Winter is coming is a phrase that refers to the halving is coming.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So like the halving is coming means winter is coming. Yeah, the yeah. halving is coming means, you know, historically, I would say like if you're a Bitcoin miner mm-hmm. and you're not running an efficient operation, you're about to get half as much Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. You need to tighten up ship, mm-hmm. right? Hunker down for the winter, if you will, mm-hmm. right? Also, because everyone knows this event is coming, they're usually not selling, right? There's less activity because they're trying to last until the next bull run. That's mm-hmm. like the cycle that we've seen. And so mapping that cycle that we've seen onto this system that I've mapped, yes, you should see peaks in the summer and you should see higher prices in what we call the summer and lower prices in what we call the winter.
But like how amazing is that for people to understand? But how amazing is that for people to be able to better understand like the so-called volatility of Bitcoin? Because then we would be able to be like, well, just think of like each halving as 1 year and there's four seasons. Yeah, when it's warm out, the price is better. When it's cold, you know, mm-hmm. it's going to go down a bit, but it's a cycle. It's a cycle. It'll get warm again outside and the price will go back. Will be even higher than it ever was, just yeah. like it is in the real world.
Yeah. And so a little bit of like money history for the listeners. What we just described is like a Bitcoin cycle and like prices going up and down. That actually existed in the real world. I'll say right before, you know, in between the Civil War and like confiscating the gold, they had all these banks. I think they were called wildcat banks. And they had all these banks out in the Midwest, right? So you got these farmers, they're growing crops, they're selling their crops, and they're putting money into these banks, right? Well, the banks were supposedly backing their money with gold, allegedly. But what we now know is that all of that gold was being siphoned out of the Midwest back to New York City, back to the banking centers of the world. And so I forget which book I was reading, but like somebody was like charting like the flows of gold. And you would see that there was a flow of gold from Central America, the Midwest, I would say, not Central America, but the Midwest of America, right? And you would see these flows of gold. Now, the problem was that they were one direction, right? The problem is that they were one direction. Because in order to get the gold back into those systems, you had to put it on a wagon or a train. You had to get it out there. Obviously, there's criminals and all kinds of stuff that are
banditos
and whatever, right? But fundamentally, it was hard. It wasn't hard to get it out. It was hard to get it back in. So that's where paper money kind of fits that bill. You can just create credit somewhere. It's like, we don't have to move the gold anymore. You mm-hmm. can still get your money, yada, yada, yada. So with Bitcoin going back into that type of system, no, like the farmers can actually get the Bitcoin all the way back to themselves now, right? So that seasonality that farmers used to see was a yearly seasonality, right? They would grow crops, they would sell them, they're flush with cash, they put them in the banks take the gold, go back to New York, mm-hmm. yada, yada, yada. Bitcoin just says that money will be back in like 4 years, right? It's kind of like establishing the return cycle for that money that didn't have a pre-baked in return cycle. Like, why would I ever bring the gold back? I'm just going to give you credit, mm-hmm. especially if you're not asking for the gold, mm-hmm. right? So what I've kind of been like thinking about, and like, we're definitely doing this for next block, right? Like, we are definitely creating seasons. We are definitely creating these moons. I've already named all 13 of them. I've made a program that like runs. It's currently posting to Noster. It's called The Observatory. We'll link to all this in the podcast show notes. I also have like a link explaining like the whole system. You can check the math. It's all there. It's not complicated math, but I think that this is a really strong way to onboard people into, just like we've been talking about on this podcast, if you've been with us for a while, like, train your brain to think in Bitcoin terms.
Get the power back, get the freedom back, get an M-Pub, and just start with that.
Are you ready for Satoshi for your thoughts?
Absolutely.
Do you think that we are going to live in this house forever?
So you asked me this question a couple months ago, and it kind of plays into what I've been talking about, which is, my answer at the time was, ask me after the next halving, mm-hmm. right? And when I was explaining this system to one of my friends or my dad or whoever I've been like explaining this to, I used that story as a way to explain to them, like, we already use Bitcoin time in our decision-making process. But we've given it this word, which is the halving, right? And that's a term that, like, if you're not a Bitcoiner, okay, whatever, the halving, I guess. And if you are a Bitcoiner, it's like an arbitrary time in the future. Again, it's just a number. You probably don't even know what the next block height is that is the next halving, right? I'll wait.
No.
Right?
No.
Okay.
The last it's one was 24000.
It's 210,000 times 5.
How embarrassing you put me on the spot.
No,
like
no, no. But what I'm saying,
listeners,
I don't even know it. I just know the math, right?
Right, right.
Okay. So my point is that I don't even know the block height. It's 210,000 times 5. It's mm-hmm. not a real period of time in the future. We mm-hmm. just know that it's coming. With this observatory idea and this lunar and solar cycle idea, my answer to that same question is, ask me next spring.
Not next spring as in
not Roman calendar spring.
Three more years.
Ask me in Bitcoin spring.
Yeah, not that fiat calendar. Get that out of here. Get.
And so, like,
you think I'm joking, but we've already had a conversation where Ian was giving me that energy. You were like, that's the Roman calendar. We're talking about this.
Well, I mean, again, the Roman calendar, we all complain about it. It doesn't make sense. Like, the months don't have the same number of days, yada, 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 yada. Plus, this idea of weekends doesn't work with Bitcoin because Bitcoin is 24/7, 365. There's no market close for Bitcoin.
Do you think that you are going to start a movement, a revolution in timekeeping with this?
No. But I do think that if you're a programmer who has worked with dates, that you understand the pain that we've been dealing with, and you're never going to get around that. Like, they did not create that calendar with computer programmers mm-hmm. in mind. Bitcoin is fundamentally created with computer programmers in mind, right? It's not telling you when something happened. It's just telling you the order in which something happened.
Ooh, I like that. I'll make a final plug for the Observatory Noster account. It's really cool because it's two things. First, if you're excited for next block's billboard to come out so you can get paid to watch ads, you'll get an idea of how often you'll be able to get paid to watch ads. But the other thing is, like, just if you're like in your regular feed and you see the Observatory posts, you have a sense of how far apart the posts are that you're looking at. It gives a heartbeat to your experience on Noster, which is what I always thought our ads would be. But Observatory is giving everyone a taste of that. Right before we launch, which will be hopefully soon. Stay tuned.
Yeah. And on top of that, like, because I've been experiencing that now. I have the test observatory in my feed and I have the real observatory in my feed. And so when I see it, I see two posts in a row, right? So it's even more pronounced for me. And I've been scrolling sometimes and there's been like two posts in between that.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there's like 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I notice it now
that
something like Primal doesn't really let me notice that, right? Mm-hmm. Primal's just like, it's Twitter, right? It's an infinite void.
We're still somewhat encouraged to just be scrolling forever.
Right. And so while this doesn't stop you from scrolling forever, this does tell you like 10 minutes, or in another way, like Bitcoin block, Bitcoin block, Bitcoin block. That being said, the observatory doesn't care about all of those stats that most of these like Bitcoin block bots have, like hash rate, difficulty adjustment, price per Bitcoin, all that fun stuff. Like, I don't have a problem with that stuff. You know, I use Time Chain Calendar to get the date for our podcast most times. I have my own thing now, but like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't have a problem with that stuff. But again, we're trying to create something that like, you don't know that this is necessarily Bitcoin, right? Like, we don't want to say the word Bitcoin unless we absolutely have to. And so the Next Block Observatory, it just tells you what season we're currently in. So it says like in the early days or the late days of summer, right? And then it tells you the phase of the moon that we're in. So currently right now we're in the new moon. And so just by putting those concepts into people's like vision, thought, you know, putting these ideas out there, I believe that the system that I'm creating specifically for Next Block City's timekeeping is actually more in tune with humanity's timekeeping system internally, because I discovered that Bitcoin is tracking the moon. And so I don't think this will be hard for people to understand, because it naturally follows something that humanity's been doing for a very long time. And to just put a fine bow on this concept, we all say that the current year is 2025. That's because on a long line of events, some dudes got on boats, went all around the world, kicked everyone's teeth in, and told them that the current year is 2025. That was not a decision that a lot of people that used that date made on their own. That decision was imposed on them one way or another. And just like Bitcoin, you can opt out of their value system, you can opt out of their fiat value measurement system. With Bitcoin, you can also opt out of their fiat timekeeping system.
So if you're ready to opt out, here's a little taste of what each observatory post looks like every time there's a new block. There's a new block, and then there's three emojis that'll be explained later. And it says, in the early days of summer, the waxing crescent friend moon casts brilliant rays across Next Block City. And then it has the moon emoji that it showed. It says the first quarter moon arrives in 504 blocks. And then there's the hugging emoji to the whale. And it says the whale moon rises in 1512 blocks. And then there's the happy sun and then leaves. And it says the autumn equinox arrives in 433,044 blocks.
That's
or,
too many.
Or sorry, numbers. No, in 43,344 blocks. So it's giving like a couple of views of what, where we stand in time. And then it has the link for observatory, and it's observatory.nextblock.city. So if you want to learn more, go there. Thanks for listening.
Get the power back, get the freedom back, get an M pub, and just start with that.